Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Stack Overflow podcast, a place to talk all things software and technology. I am your host, Ben Popper, Director of Content here at Stack Overflow, joined as I often am by my colleague and collaborator, Ryan Donovan. Hey, Ryan.
Hey, Ben. How are you doing today?
Good. We have a sponsored episode today by Warner Brothers Discovery. It's going to be an exciting one and a topic near and dear to my heart, content recommendation. I think this is something that, you know, all of us live every day. We're constantly served up suggestions for the next thing to read or listen to or watch. But how it works behind the curtain is a bit of a mystery, yeah?
That's right. Yeah. Let's get the great and powerful Oz out of here.
Exactly. All right. So without further ado, I'd like to invite on our two guests, Soumya and Srikant. Welcome to the Stack Overflow podcast.
Thank you for having us here.
So we'd like to kick things off here to the degree that you're comfortable dating yourself. Soumya, why don't you go first? Tell us a little bit about how you fell in love with computers and technology. You know, what was the first thing you did coding on, and how did that sort of take you to where you are today?
Sure. Hi, I'm Soumya. And how I got into computer science was we had an Atari computer at home. So I'm definitely dating myself. And you could play Pac-Man on it with the joysticks that used to be there. And I used to play a lot of Pac-Man. And one day I found this basic cartridge for basic programming language, and it was just lying around. Nobody was using it. So I plugged it in, loaded it up. And before I knew it, I was writing code. And the computer was kind of like talking back. You could make it do things like simple math, right. Like right. 7 plus 2, and it'll tell you 9. And I thought, oh my God, this is so cool. So I don't think I even realized I was programming or what programming was. And I kind of walked into it and really, really enjoyed it. And I think I was very much a logical thinker. So things like flowcharts and back in the day, just kind of piecing together different sequences of steps and programming more and more complex things seemed extremely intuitive for me. And it was just magical to get this thing, this box that was playing Pac-Man to do things for me.
Right.
So that was my journey. That was my start. Many years later, I took logo programming in high school. And again, what was fascinating was using that to do some drawings. You know, I drew a profile picture of Mahatma Gandhi, who was, the freedom fighter of India. And it came out so much nicer than myself drawing it on paper. So it was always really, really fascinating for me that you could produce things and create things. And that creative aspect is what kept me going. I did computer science in undergraduate at Mount Holyoke College, which is a liberal arts college. And again, there, that intersection of technology and applied is what was fascinating, whether it was programming a robot for obstacle detection, or we used assembly language and I made a piano with all the features that I wish a real piano had, because I'm not a musician, make mistakes. I really wanted to be able to delete back and restart from where right. I was correct. So one thing led to the next. I got into database systems as an intern at Microsoft, worked on Microsoft Access and SQL Server, went to grad school at University of Wisconsin-Madison, joined Oracle for databases, large-scale database systems, decided I want to move into more consumer-oriented things, so went to Google. So I was at Oracle 8 years, Google 15 years, and had a lot of fun. And recently joined Discovery and now Warner Brothers Discovery.
Terrific. That's an awesome history. Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things you say that really rings true when we ask people that question, a lot of times what takes them into the world of programming is something that to them just seems fun or evokes their curiosity. Not, I felt I needed to learn programming so I could have a successful career. You know, that's not often how people sort of get pulled into the space. So very cool to hear. Srikant, how about yourself?
Yeah, so I fall in the category you just spoke about because I was not as a cool kid like Soumya. So I got introduced to computers mostly from the gaming. So at one point, I also kind of believed that computers are meant for gaming. So it's better
I
than
wouldn't argue with
the
that. That's
video
true. That's
games,
true.
right?
Yeah.
So that's how I got introduced to computer. But like most of the Indian kids, when I started looking at, I mean, I started my engineering, that's when I got to know that what are the amazing things we can do with computers. Like, you know, that's when my curiosity kind of started triggering. Oh yeah, and gamings are good, but how they are developed, how they are done, how they are coded, like what happens behind the scenes, what kind of hardware, right? What kind of software, how they come together, how the fascinating things happen within a small box. So that's when it triggered my interest in the computer science, and I did my undergrad in my computer science too. So it was more of an breadth of coverages of different topics,
Right.
algorithms, data structures, databases, those stuff. Then I started working with the fintech industry as my first career after my undergrad. There I spent a lot of time on, you can call it as like, you know, black Unix screen, where I spent time in shell scripting and databases and fine-tuning C++ code. Of course, the financial industry has legacy code where I got introduced to the basics of computers more than my undergrad studies. That's where I learned, like, oh, this is the applied where we learned, and here I can apply my skills, right? That's why I learned. But soon I realized that I need to study more and I need to understand more. That's when I came here for my master's, where I spent a lot of time in data explorations, maybe in subdivision of databases. You can call it as a lot of time spent in data exploration courses, and I did my thesis in data mining and the machine learning. And the machine, that's when I got introduced to a lot of machine learning and the AI sides of it. However, there was another interesting field going on in the industry at that time. It was a cloud engineering. So I started exploring more on the cloud engineering side, even though I had a formal degree and studied in machine learning and AI. Like after spending some years in the cloud engineering, the time came where I started realizing the potential and intersection of these two things, right? So engineering, ML and AI, how do you combine these things and build a product for the company? So that's when I started working more on the science as well as the ML AI engineering systems point of view. Spent some time there. That has helped me to grow my career and curiosity. And at this point, I feel, even though after this career, I don't know anything because there is so much to learn outside. There is so much of industry and so much of domain knowledges. So I think we should continue investing in that direction. I still feel like, you know, I should do my undergrad again because there is so much things I did not learn when I was there in the school.
Right. That makes sense. Ryan, I'm going to let you dive in after this, but I guess the question I'll ask to both of you, and whoever wants to take it, you mentioned, sort of your introduction, and then both of you, it sounded like had a bunch of time in database, moving to cloud. Today, we're going to talk a bit about sort of AI ML and recommendations. So what's the toolkit that you're using today on the AI ML side? And to what degree did the experiences you had in the past sort of prepare you for those?
So yeah, in terms of the toolings, you can say that right now, when I graduated, there are not many tools were available for ML and AI. It used to be more of, you know, modeling these things in a Python or R, that kind of languages. But the real-time systems used to run on C++ and Java kind of programming languages. But at this point, we use there are so many frameworks like PyTorch, TensorFlow. And in terms of algorithm choices, there are multiple algorithms. Like you can use like a lot of traditional algorithms. In addition to that, the deep learning has been area where which has been tremendously changed a lot, not just from the algorithm side of it, even it's from the computational point of it. At one point, we had these algorithms, but the systems and the capabilities or the infrastructures were not supporting those things. But today we can do parallel processing, compute them, and train models in the minutes of seconds, or we can serve them in a seconds, like you can see the autonomous cars, right? When you're driving, looking at surroundings, those can make inference and the predictions with sub milliseconds, right? So that kind of a computations and those things have arrived that has helped us into the current stage. Coming back to the question, very specific to what kind of tools we use, at Discovery, we are mostly AWS shop. We started our journey through a lot of AWS services like AWS Personalize. Then we started using some of their SageMaker tools for the model training and the pipeline purposes. But in the long term, the vision is we also started looking at building our own custom models for the serving, not just using the enterprise tools. And those custom models are on par with the industry-wide. Like if I had to put my custom models against the AWS Specialized, they are performing as good as, in some aspects, they are performing better than them. So we have built such tools on TensorFlow today. And we are looking at building these machine learning pipelines end-to-end, which can serve most of our use cases, not using the generic frameworks. We are also looking at some technologies like Feast for the feature store. We are looking for some of the inference engines, something like Kaser with the Seldon Core, that kind of a thing. We are also looking at MLflow kind of an architecture for manage the experimentations and deploy the models. There are a lot of open source technologies and enterprise tools. We don't have to kind of reinvent the wheel again. But combining these two together, we can build our own solutions, which is meant to solve the use cases for our company.
Right.
I would just add to this that in terms of tooling and infrastructure, as Srikant said, the industry has come a really long way. So the bar for using machine learning has been lowered so much over the last 10 plus years, because of all the open source framework and technology that's out there and out-of-box algorithms that you can leverage, right? So we use AWS Personalize a lot. And for getting started, that works really, really good to solve problems like, how do I do my homepage recommendation? At the same time, if you want to go into it deeper, have a more richer training data set, if you want to have a richer evaluation framework, if you want to have more of a faster turnaround time and more control over what are the learning techniques and algorithms that you want to use, then you also can build further from there and say, hey, how do I build my own ML infrastructure for my company or my stack? And what are things like TensorFlow and others that I could use to bootstrap and then build from. So I think it's really getting to a place where bootstrapping and getting going is much, much simpler than it was years ago.
Right.
And then you can add to it more richer semantics.
Mm.
That's interesting to talk about how it's much easier to get started with an ML project. But once you get started, what then is the sort of hard problem to solve?
I think there are a few. One is, and this is something as I stepped into Discovery and Srikant and I and a few others have discussed, evaluation, side-by-side evals, how do you evaluate whether a model is doing what you want it to do? Mm-hmm. And how do you measure quantifiably that the model is, the improvements you're doing are resulting in the changes and metric gains that you're looking for? Right. That is something that is still not out of the box available. And so that's one of the challenges for you to figure out for your business needs, your user needs, for the metrics that you're trying to improve. How do you continue to evaluate and iterate? So that's one. The second is the feature extraction or the metadata extraction and signals that you're using to inform your models and train your models. And again, we are barely scratching the surface in the work that we're doing today. We're using kind of rich metadata that we have, we're getting with our assets. And is there more that we could be doing? Could we be having better video understanding? And does it really make a big difference or not? If you want to add in, we've been experimenting with CoWatch and metrics around that and signals from that. How do you meaningfully have high quality data and metrics that you're gathering that can funnel back into your pipeline? Because many times, I think for a company that's not like a Google, the underlying metrics and data don't exist, or the quality of the data doesn't exist. So you need to fix those problems first before you can apply machine learning effectively.
Mm, interesting.
And another perspective here is one angle, yes. I mean, whatever Samyam was telling is a true, but many of the machine learning use cases, even though these tools are available, the open source tools are available today, you like write two lines of code in TensorFlow, your model will be ready to deploy. But when you hit the real-time scenario, when you hit the business use cases, when you want to productionalize that, it's a lot more than that and much more than that. Because there is, when you say something needs to be put in production and you want to put it in front of your customer, they need to go through number of checklists, like in terms of operationability, in terms of maintainability, in terms of scaling, in terms of all those things, how to work. So none of those things will be taught or told when these frameworks are built. So we had to take them, we had to kind of build it based on our use cases. That's something every company has to do on their own. And there is no such tool or nobody will be kind of telling us like how to do that. So that's a very critical part of it. There was a Google article which basically published on the same thing too. ML code is like very a small piece of the bigger puzzle, right? There is always the features, the metadata, data. I think Samyam touched on the data a little bit, right? So a lot of tutorials you go through, data is given to you. Data is already created for you. But in real time, data with high quality never exists. You always right. need to kind of fight around it and get the data for your models and train those models. That's where people spend a lot of time, not in the training or not tuning the models.
Right. So I would love to hear an example, you know, from the time that the two of you have been working together or, you know, applying yourself to this project over the last year or two. What were some sort of eureka moments that were exciting? Like, okay, now we understand, you know, how best to refine this data to get the best result. Or, you know, as you pointed out, you know, we're applying this to co-watching or repeat watching or binge watching. Now we really understand where we can have a great signal. And, you know, then from there, how the system can improve people's experience with, you know, the app that they're using.
Sure, I can talk one use case. Some I might have more too. So one of the use cases, like, for example, we were using some features like, you know, the watch start and watch complete for every episode, right? So that were one of the signals we started using. We wanted to use more features like percentage watched, how much of the time each episode or each content is watched as a signal for the machine learning algorithms. Straightforward, right? If you have that signal, yeah, today I can train the model and deploy it. It's like, it should be a less than a week or maybe less than a day kind of and work. But however, the challenging part was how does we can get this data from the UI back to us, how we can process that data. And also the signals, like when you say percentage watch, that needs to be computed from the data and aggregation systems from the backend. How do we do that? And that was not easy. And that was, I mean, it was not set up to be in a consumable format. Even though if you are consuming, we want to do kind of a real-time recommendations. For example, if somebody goes to Discovery Plus or HBO Max site, you do some interaction, you watch some content, right? So that content needs to flow back and we build our features and we need to give you new recommendation based on what kind of interactions you are doing on the site, right? So that has to be near real-time. So we don't serve the stale content on the website. So when you want it real time, that data needs to be aggregated and passed into the backend system. that ability was not there. So along with working for our algorithms, we also need to kind of work with the partner teams, like a data team. We spoke to them. We said, like, how we can get that aggregates done, how we can process it. It's like, you know, kind of terabytes and petabytes of data processed on day-to-day basis because it's coming on the event streams, right? So how do you process that? How do you do that? That was the biggest challenging thing we faced. But at this point, we got that data and we kind of tuned into the model. And we are running multiple experiments now. How much of percentage watched really means somebody liked the content or somebody did not like the content, and so that we can make the recommendations based on that. So that was one recent use case I can talk about.
Yeah, thank you. That was interesting. Samia, did you want to weigh in on that?
I can just add one more, and I think without giving too much details, another aha or eureka moment was, as a company, we are shifting from being very editorial and human heavy to be more machine heavy, right? And in the process, mistakes that you make with the algorithm are costly, because when you're making that culture shift happen, anytime your model or some change you roll out doesn't quite deliver as you expected, which is going to happen, you lose credibility in the fact that, can the machine really do this? And so you tend to fall back to the human side. And this has been really interesting to watch and balance, particularly coming from a very technology-focused company where you start with the technology first and then you have to convince people why you need the human on top of it. That was Google and YouTube. Versus here, you're doing the complete opposite, which is you're starting with a very manual, human-heavy process, and now you're saying, hey, what more could we be doing here? And what is that 10x, 100x gains that we can get by leaning more into machine learning or automation? So that less specific about the models themselves, but more of a shift that you have to do as when you're going through that technology transformation.
It's interesting. I'm curious if y'all would be willing to talk a little more about how machine learning can recommend content. You know, as a consumer, I get recommended content all the time, and I've heard it done through, you know, sort of nearest neighbor algorithms where they find other users like you. And then Spotify doing stuff with their Echo Nest API, where they actually understand the content in some way. Like, do you have a mix of that? Do you rely on individual users? Do you, you know, apply some of the sort of human tagging to it?
So I can talk a little bit about it. So end of day, when you want to provide a recommendation, it's basically based on the patterns, like how users spend time on the site and what kind of things they like to do and not like to do. We understand that pattern. And based on that, we can recommend something to the user, right? One of the thing is, you can say that based on the history, we can recommend something. Like, for example, Srikant watches these kind of shows and usually has affinity towards these kind of shows. Let's recommend him these kind of shows. And that's a general idea. Since you spoke about a couple of nearest neighbor algorithms, we use deep learning algorithms, which are basically sequence-based models. So what we do is we capture user history, what they are interested in, and what kind of interactions they have made. I just spoke about time watched was one of the features we see, like how much they watch, what they click, where they spend time. So once we understand that, then we make the recommendation based on what is the probability that these are shows watched in the past, what is the probability that given a show, they watch it or not. So we calculate those probabilities and rank them in order and serve it to the customer. And this is more of a recommendations point of view. And then there are a lot of other areas where we have navigational content, right? Basically, the genre on the homepage will be kind of customized based on every user, because there are, we based on our studies, we found out that there are like, you know, 5 or 6 genres where usually people stick to. And if that genre is like, you know, on the second page, usually they have to navigate and come back. So we want to avoid them. So content discovery is another big piece here, right? So how we can help them, how we can help them into navigate better, so that we personalize those things and say that, okay, so you are going to watch, you are a science and fiction genre guy. So let me, and you watch most of the content from that, let me put it on the first place so that you can always find it on the immediately when you land on the site. And that is personalized to each user. The goal here is to make our customers' life easy and make it simpler for to use the app so that they can find the content they want to watch very easily. So that's a goal to provide these recommendations.
Very cool.
And the one other thing maybe I would add to this, coming from like having done like YouTube music recommendations and kids YouTube kids, I was leading those projects before. And one of the things I think we really want to make sure, and I don't think anyone has really cracked this in the industry, and that's what's so exciting and is the opportunity here. We're from the get-go, some of the design principles we are using in our algorithms and what we are monitoring is we want to ensure there's content diversity in the recommendation that is delightful for the user. So it's not diversity for the sake of diversity, but to add to what the user is already stating as their intent and preference through their watch patterns. What are signals that we can infer where maybe some adjacent content might also be interesting to this user and not take them too far off while also introducing them to a richer candidate pool of content? And right. I think that is something when you observe what editors do, humans do, they form that web of connection. Not because the metadata is telling you this, not because there's like an action scene here and an action scene there. There is something more that a human is bringing to the table in connecting the dots. And, you know, I think Pandora had explored this model for music, right? Where they had humans looking through the connections and patterns and the fabric of what is connecting these different pieces of music together, and then how do you bring it into the recommendation? So this is something we're definitely very actively exploring, which is what are the ways in which we infer signals that allow you to create a web that's richer than, in a way, one-dimensional view that you get when you look at metadata or extract things from the content itself.
Yeah, I'm glad you make that point. One of my favorite stories I ever wrote as a journalist was about Discover Weekly on Spotify. And the data they use there is playlists created by people. And then someone made a playlist similar to you, but it has one song you didn't include. Well, sort of like human taste is kind of the raw material that, you know, the algorithm then can then do some pattern matching on. And I've always loved the recommendations from that. I guess another thing I wanted to say there was, you know, trust and safety are such an important part of recommendation yes. algorithms. And you make a good point that, like, you don't want to just take people down a wormhole because they happen to watch one video. You want to have some, you know, also human in the loop who's understanding why things might be interesting or appropriate for who you're recommending it to.
Yes, absolutely.
So I just wanted to, ask one last question. When you're thinking about hiring and retaining technical talent now, which is, as we all know, extremely competitive, what are the things that, you know, attract great AI ML folks? I know in this space, you know, being able to sort of share your work or work on things that are open in some way is interesting, being able to break new ground, or being able to, work on really difficult challenges. So, you know, as engineering leaders within this organization, how do you think about that?
For me, the formula is not that different from in a less competitive market. I think it's really, really for me, the passion and the mission-driven nature of the work is, I think, really important. And so when we look for whether we are hiring or retention, it's leaning into the vision and the opportunity of how we can impact users, how we can impact the future of streaming and consumption. Are at the core and heart of how you motivate both your team that is here mm-hmm. and how do you attract that talent that wants to come and solve that problem. So very much lean into the passion and the mission and eagerness to solve that problem. The second thing is technology transformation can be hard. It is also extremely empowering for engineers, for technologists, where it's easier sometimes to solve these problems when you're in a tech company, because that is the DNA of the company. That's the DNA of everyone around you.
Right.
Coming here and taking an infrastructure that may not have been built with some of this in mind and really going and having that moonshot vision and saying, what am I going to do to get there? And I don't have 10 years. I don't have 10 years to catch up with Netflix or, you know, anyone else.
Right.
I don't have the luxury of time in a company like this. And what am I going to do, almost like a startup, to solve these problems with the experience that I have seen before as an individual, to come up with a creative way of approaching it,
right,
and in an efficient way. So I think that is extremely fulfilling for engineers, particularly experienced engineers, and also for incoming college graduates who are looking for that greenfield opportunity and can have that kind of impact and scale. Even our interns have that.
Right.
You know?
No, I think you make a good point. It's exciting to be working in the underdog position, you know, to have that feeling and also, as you said, mission-driven and to want to catch up to players and the tech space who might be ahead. I guess also if they get to see the stuff that comes out on HBO before I get to see it, that would be really appealing. Do they get sneak previews? No, I'm just kidding.
I'm still waiting for my dog food access for HBO. I'm waiting for that too. That's my driver to be here.
Exactly. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. As always, we appreciate it. I am Ben Popper, Director of Content here at Stack Overflow. You can always find me on Twitter at Ben Popper. Email us with questions or suggestions, podcast@StackOverflow. And if you like what you heard, leave us a rating and a review. It really helps.
I'm Ryan Donovan. I'm the editor of the blog here at Stack Overflow. You can find me on Twitter at rthordonovan. And if you have a great idea for a blog, please email me at pitches@stackoverflow.com.
I'm Soumya Subramanian, EVP of Engineering at Warner Brothers Discovery, leading our streaming platform efforts. And you can find me on LinkedIn and Twitter, and I will try to keep up.
Hi, I'm Srikant Desai. I'm Director of Engineering. I manage most of recommendation and personalization at Warner Brothers Discovery. Of course, you can find me on LinkedIn. Please reach me out if you have any questions. Thank you.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening, and we will talk to you soon.